When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Dr. Chef Stephanie White is the Director of Academic Enrichment at the Auguste Escoffier School of Culinary Arts. Stephanie, I don't know if I said that right again. It's been a couple of years. So I fixed.
It was close. It was okay. Close. So right. It's French is Auguste. So it's a little rounded in the mouth, but Escoffier is what we generally go by. So you're good.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Well, welcome back to the show, Stephanie.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be back. I had a blast last time, and I can't believe it's been over 2 years now. So yeah. we're overdue for another session.
100%. So refresh our collective memories. Tell us about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Sure. So professionally, I like to say that I was raised in the culinary industry. My background is a chef, a professional chef training. But since then, I have a master's in food studies and a doctorate in higher education leadership. So that can seem like a very meandering road, but basically basic needs and access has always been a large central point in my life. So like my dissertation for my doctorate was on food insecurity in higher education institutions. So when you hear that, it's usually a little bit easier to kind of wrap around what the heck I'm doing. But basically, I think it's really important for everybody to have access to food and healthy foods that are culturally appropriate. So I spend a lot of my personal professional life around that topic. And then me personally, I am somebody who was born and raised on the East Coast and moved to the Midwest for work about a decade ago. I cannot believe that I'm a Kentucky resident and have been for almost 8 years, but really love where I'm currently living. I have an amazing husband and three amazing rescue dogs. So my life is full of, I actually have a dog in my office right now. So I'm going to say W-A-L-K because that will trigger them if I say the whole word.
They will be full of enthusiasm.
Yeah. And then that will be the show is
you trying to figure out how to unwind that deal.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I can't promise. If I say a word, I can't promise that unless I can deliver. So
I totally get it. Well, excellent. Well, congratulations on continuing your professional development. I think that's a really awesome thing. And life is not a straight line for any of us. So that it meanders a little bit is just the way things go. Mm-hmm. Food insecurity and culturally appropriate options or choices. What is food insecurity?
So food insecurity, I mean, there are actual definitions set by like the USDA as to basically the level of financial precarity that a person may be in that correlates to how much they can actually afford foods. The easiest way that oftentimes people think about it is food insecurity is not simply just like, oh, I'm hungry. It's not having access to foods to actually nourish yourself. So that can look a lot of different ways in people's lives. It may mean that they're perpetually only consuming potentially ultra processed foods or fast foods because economically they're either more available or demographically that's what's available in the area. So that's a very obviously simplistic viewpoint of that. But basically food insecurity is the idea that someone does not have adequate access to the foods to ensure that they are healthy. And oftentimes that can look from a health perspective as somebody who's either severely undernourished and underweight, or somebody who might be overweight but still undernourished because they're not getting the nutrients they need. That happens at both extremes. So I think that's probably the quickest way that I can review that. Yeah.
I think it's a fascinating tragedy that's a real thing. We've got, you know, people that live in, theoretically speaking, the greatest cities in the world, yet their choices for nourishing their bodies are not good, leaving them food insecure.
Yeah. And you know, oftentimes, I think most folks have probably heard the term of food deserts. Mm-hmm. I think most of the time people have heard that term before. But oftentimes it's not just in urban environments, it's in rural environments where folks do not have a grocery store within 10 miles. And if you don't have reliable transportation, that puts you in a real pickle to be able to really kind of do anything, unless you're also then growing your own food, which, as we all know, is an amazing thing to do, but not often most of us do not have the time to do it, maybe don't have the skills necessary to start that endeavor. So, you know, it's quite challenging across many different geographic areas and economic statuses and social backgrounds. So it impacts people profusely and profoundly. So yeah. It's wild.
Yeah. And what a problem to work on solving. Or are you working to solve it? Are you
what's the hope? Yeah. I mean, the whole hope is everybody has access to the foods that fuel them both physically, emotionally, and socially. You know, that's the pie in the sky. Everybody should have access. I think that's a human right. That being said, obviously there are a lot more complexities to the topic, not just within the United States, but globally. There's a lot of difficulties with distribution and agriculture and food waste and food loss is another topic. So, you know, it's pie in the sky. That is the whole hope, because everybody has the appropriate needs that they need. That being said, that is obviously a super complex thing to tease out. It's not one person's, you know, ability to necessarily totally eradicate. However, a big part of kind of what fuels me is increasing the awareness, as well as thinking about in higher education institutions, looking at what mechanisms can institutions put in place to help support their current population. So for them, it's students, but also faculty and staff, because oftentimes there's a lot of research, particularly in the last decade, around student food insecurity. However, there are also faculty and staff members that may not make a lot of money. And, you know, they're fueled by the work that they get to do at an institution and helping students. And it's amazing. Or teaching assistants, that like different roles like that, they just don't make a lot of money currently in our structure, and may also be struggling with food insecurity. So at least with my doctorate and that type of research, I'm specifically focusing at it from an institutional perspective, looking at the systems that constrain and enable the ability for like basic need centers to be available on campuses, or what other resources are available to students as well as faculty and staff members. But obviously, if we take it outside of the higher education space, that's looking at food banks and food pantries and how policies also impact access. So it's complex. So mostly I try to better understand it for myself, but also better understand it so that I can help other people understand it and hopefully find different avenues that they can contribute to it.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I can't blame you for being really interested and invested in it, because my wheels are spinning for sure. And I mean, you talk about people who live in rural environments and in urban environments, but then you have people that are probably really financially successful and are educated, and they are wildly unhealthy, and either they're choosing to, or they have no idea, but what they're putting into their bodies is killing them, essentially. Mm-hmm. So there's all that. And then you've got politics comes into it, and It's just it's a lot, but like any major problem, all we can do is focusing on what you just said, understanding ourselves, and then impacting the people that we have influence over.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing is, like you said, it's just finding the different avenues that you may actually have control over. Because when we think about whether or not it's access, or maybe you do have access, like you're talking about folks who have the ability to cook or have access to a kitchen or have access to disposable income, there's still oftentimes barriers to eating either the foods that would nourish them the most or that make the most sense in that current situation. So yeah, it's tricky. We live in an odd food economy. It doesn't make it easy for anybody to make either a perfect decision or the right decision. Candidly, I don't think there's any one right decision when it comes to food, because it's dependent on the context situation. It's gray. And, you know, everybody's needs are different too. So it's not like there's one epitome of a perfect meal. That's a fallacy. So it's fun.
Right. Right. Steak and potatoes, that probably really offend a lot of people. So
there's a time and a place.
One size does not fit all, Stephanie. No, and then not. I've got my continuous glucose monitor that says that if I eat that potato, my head will explode or whatever it might be.
Maybe not that dramatic, but yeah, I mean, some folks do have a lot of glucose intolerances, right, depending on what's going on. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not the expert, Stephanie. I'm hoping you can.
let's switch it to a sweet potato. It's lower glycemic.
Okay.
We'll be
perfect.
Good. Well, that's one thing to start with.
All right. Great. See, we're already breaking through things here. I remember pre-pandemic reading about how for the first time Americans were consuming more food away from home so it's food away from home. I'd never heard that term before. And I thought that was really interesting. So we were eating out, and then all of a sudden the pandemic happens, and then we weren't eating out quite as much. And now we've got DoorDash and Grubhub, and we've got these meal prep services, and there's just so much. What trends are you observing? And obviously people are unhealthy and we have food insecurity. So it's just such a dynamic space that you occupy. What are you seeing?
Well, I think you're right. A lot of folks are, whether or not they're eating away, the pandemic definitely changed consumer behaviors. That being said, now that it's weird. I continue to reflect on the pandemic and how much it's changed us as a society, not just with food, but
when you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
When I think about people started to eat more at home, obviously, because we were forced to be at home oftentimes. However, like you said, Grubhub, things like Yelp, the order in is definitely still very, very fond for most people. I don't know anybody who doesn't order something to be delivered at some point in time, whether or not it's once a week or multiple times a week. There are very few people who don't do that at all. And if you don't do that at all, kudos to you for sure. But there's definitely the convenience factor that I think appeals to a lot of folks. Thinking about I think post pandemic, people have returned to restaurants. There have been openings of new restaurants, and it's certainly not a bad time to be in the restaurant industry if that's what you like to do with your life. But consumer behaviors still haven't totally click back to what it was pre-pandemic. And I don't know if we'll ever get to that point anyway. Not that it was the perfect ratio anyway. So just thinking about that, like folks are still, you know, ordering either in or going out more than they're making foods at home for a lot of different reasons. I mean, a lot of folks feel time impoverished where they're working copious amounts of hours. Maybe they're raising kids or caring for other dependents or just caring for themselves and trying to do other things that generally speaking happen outside of the home. So it leaves most people feeling like they do not have adequate time to be able to cook at home. The other thing is many people may not feel that they are confident with culinary skills enough to prepare food at home. Now, that being said, there are obviously companies like Blue Apron and all those other companies that do the pre kind of fabbed meal kits. And I think that's incredibly beneficial for a lot of folks who are like, I don't know where to start, but at least this gets me the ingredients that I need and has, you know, a recipe to follow with it. So it's easier to kind of digest that whole process. And it makes it a little bit more appealing for many folks. You know, so there's definitely a place for that for many people. I will say that if I were to be critical of those companies, many of them use a lot of packaging. So from a sustainability perspective, that is definitely a concern that I see. The other thing is it's you're paying a premium for that. So, you know, if you don't have the disposable income to pay for those, you may be paying a lot more than you would if you just prep the ingredients yourself. But again, for some people that is an insurmountable thing to do or perceived. So at least with those meal kits, they're consuming more at home made dishes versus just foregoing the whole thing. So there's a place for it for sure.
Yeah. Like anything else, there's a lot going on there. I'm perfectly comfortable eating a handful of the same foods over and over again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is that common or uncommon?
I think it's common. Obviously, there are different, everybody has their own kind of sweet spot when it comes to like meal prepping or eating the same flavor profiles. Like I find that for me, I tend to be like, I'm happy to eat the same meal over, you know, a time span as long as it's kind of like, it changes with the season. So like during this winter, I'm not particularly craving strawberries. So I'm not going to make a salad with strawberries. It's just weird. But for some people, you know, that consistency does actually happen, you know, day in and day out, year over year. And there's not anything wrong with that per se. It's just, you know, personal preferences. I think oftentimes, like I think about, I love my father, but he tends to be a safe eater. And it's not a joke, but it's more of a thing that we all chuckle at, where if there's a tuna melt on a menu, he's going to get the tuna melt. I don't personally think that's a safe food to consume many places, but it's just a dish that calls to him. And to him, that's something that's a flavor profile that he feels very comfortable with. And so it's an easy decision for him to make. So, you know, everybody's a little bit different. We're like, my mom's a very adventurous eater. She'll try the new thing because it's, you know, exciting to try a different flavor profile or try a different spin on an eggplant dish. But you know, that's not comfortable for many people as well. So it kind of depends on what you grew up with, what your personal preferences are. You know, there's a lot that goes behind personal food choices. So I'd say you're not atypical and having sort of a wheelhouse of probably a couple different dishes that you'd normally eat. And that's good. But again, you know, everybody's a little bit different when it comes to that for sure.
Yeah. You know, I want everybody to be happy and healthy, and certainly food is a very large line item in our lives. It's expensive, so because we have to eat all the time, obviously. But how we do that, I think we fall into particular or predictable patterns and habits, and we just sort of repeat those. And we're in the habit of eating well and caring about that, or I'm just in the habit of feeding myself. And there's obviously varying degrees to all of that. Mm-hmm. If you're, let's just pretend that you're counseling me on if I am somebody who's just in the habit of eating out or going through mm-hmm. drive-throughs or having food delivered, but I'm not prepping it, I'm just consuming it. Mm-hmm. What would be baby steps to me being able to make scrambled eggs in the morning, make a sandwich or something for lunch and then have chicken and rice or something like that for dinner. Or and I think you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, no. So I would say that candidly, those are definitely like individual conversations you need to have or that a person needs to have, because one person's choice for making those habits versus others could be very different. So ask yourself, why are you making those decisions? First, having a good understanding of what drives you to make either decisions around I'm going to eat out today, or even if it's the counter perspective of I'm going to cook today. Well, why do you want to cook? What do you want to cook? Why does that make sense? Because, scrambled eggs are lovely in the morning, but it may depend on the person's lifestyle. Like if you have to go to work at 6 o'clock in the morning and you're not hungry immediately, scrambled eggs probably not a great idea, because you're not probably wanting to eat at that time. And leftover scrambled eggs, if you want to re-cook them at like 8 a.m. when you are hungry, is probably not going to be the best
probably not
dish.
Great.
Yeah, exactly. Like you could make it work, but like it's not going to be the best dish for you. So that's a really big part, is when thinking about whatever you want to change in your life, why do you want to change it, so that you can understand what are your personal barriers or hurdles? Because if it's time, finances, maybe effort level, you have to have a good understanding of what that looks like for you, so that you are more prepared to be able to handle that hurdle and be able to work around it. So one thing that can be really helpful for a lot of folks is using a SMART goal. I don't know if everybody who's listening knows about a SMART goal, but basically if I were saying, hey, I want to eat healthier, if you just say, I have a goal of eating healthier, the likelihood of you actually following through on that is pretty small, unless you actually make it specific, measurable, attainable, real, like there are things that you need to do around that goal to ensure that you have a better understanding of how you're going to achieve it. It's like when, every single year, I think everybody has a New Year's resolution, like, I want to get healthier, I want to move more. That's a great initiative, but if you don't know how you're actually going to achieve that, you're likely not going to achieve it. So the idea is thinking about like, okay, I want to eat healthier. Well, I want to increase the amount of vegetables that I'm consuming in a week. And I know right now I'm having, say, 2 servings a day, which is not enough. Maybe it's one. It doesn't matter. It's not about judging where you're at currently. It's figuring out what is the next step. So I'm going to increase it by 1 serving a day, and I'm going to see if I can do that for a week. And then after that, I'm going to see what went well, what didn't go well. Maybe there were meals where I crushed it, and then other times I just wasn't feeling it, or maybe I was too busy with work or whatever else I was doing that day. So taking the time to reflect on how you're progressing towards that goal and continuously modifying it so that you're incrementally getting better at achieving that is going to go much farther than just saying, I'm going to overhaul my entire diet overnight. That's not sustainable. Don't do that. It's not a good idea. So hopefully that helps. Obviously, it's a much longer explanation, but I everybody's situation is different. So it's hard to be like, hey, go buy some oats. Well, that might be a great idea for one person to do overnight oats, or I like oatmeal in the morning. I have no problem making it, but not everybody likes oats. So if you don't like it, the likelihood of you then doing that or following through on it without just having oats in your pantry for 2 years and then it's just sitting there staring at you, judging you. So it's sometimes it doesn't help to give very specific, broad, examples, but just trying to figure out what you can do individually, or if one of your personal challenges is that you're feeding a family, or cooking with other folks, or needing to feed other individuals, involve them in that decision making process, because that can also help as a unit come up with a plan. And oftentimes that also ensures there's buy-in, because you might live with a picky eater, and it's much easier if they also have a say in it. Because the likelihood of them actually consuming it is going to be a little bit higher. So,
perfect advice. I love it. I love the SMART framework. It's really, really helpful. And to your point, just simply saying I'm going to eat healthy and success arrives because of that intention is not enough. We need to be really specific about everything. And I love it. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for coming back on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage with you?
The best place to find me is actually my personal website. It's stephaniemikelak.com. So I'm going to actually spell that out because my maiden last name is not the most user-friendly, but it's Stephanie, STEPHANIEMICHALAK .com. Or you can email me at that. Basically, my email is my name, but with a period in between Stephanie and Mike Black. But that's the best way to directly contact me. If you can't remember my Gmail, my personal website is the best way to get there because I've got it all looped together.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Stephanie your appreciation, share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to Stephanie Michalek, Michalek?
Michalek. Yeah, you're good.
Michalek. It's Auguste Escoffier.
School of Culinary Arts.
Just kidding. Just kidding, everybody. So it's STEPHANIEMICHALAK.com. And Stephanie's got so many great resources to help you accomplish everything that you're trying to accomplish when it comes to your eating and just all of that really important stuff, making sure that we're nourishing ourselves and not just shoving calories down our calorie hole, Stephanie.
One can hope. Right. But thanks so much for having me on the show again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you again. And until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.